I encourage everybody listening today is to set up a trigger meditation. And so whatever you want your trigger to be, just try it and see what happens with your life and see if it helps you be more authentically you and connect to the joy in the journey.
Setting goals allows us to envision a brighter future and work towards achieving our dreams. But what happens when we set big goals, like really big goals, the kind that make our hearts race and our minds question if we're even capable of achieving them? In the face of adversity, some individuals choose to rise above the circumstances, finding strength and inspiration in pursuing their passions. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Chaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together we will step away from focusing on the doing and step into the being so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. In this episode, we will dive into the inspiring story of Jen Drummond, a world record holder in mountaineering who shares her journey of resilience and self-discovery. After a near-death experience and the loss of a friend, Jen decided to prioritize herself and pursue her passion for climbing mountains. She became the first woman to climb the second highest peak on each of the seven continents. Jen's story is a reminder to embrace challenges, focus on the present moment, and find the joy in the journey. Her message of resilience and determination is inspiring for anyone facing their own personal Everest. Join us as we explore the themes of resilience, creativity, and the delicate balance between motherhood and personal goals. Prepare to be inspired by Jen's incredible journey and gain valuable insights into finding strength amidst adversity. Now, a couple of quick announcements before we meet Jen. Transformation in Paradise Costa Rica is completely sold out, but I've got a surprise though for you, and I've shared this last week on the podcast. If you were able to join me in Costa Rica this year, you'll have the opportunity to come to our next retreat in Lefkada, Greece, next October, October 12th to 19th, 2024. The waiting list for early bird registrations opens up in a few days, and I'll be sending out an email with all the details, as well as sharing the early bird waiting list link. So make sure you join that waiting list to get first dibs to join and to catch the early bird pricing. Spots are super limited this time around, and we have the most gorgeous view that is going to take your breath away. We're going to be eating delicious homemade Greek food, overlooking a 360-degree panorama of the ocean and the mountains, daily yoga practice, nature excursions, and workshops that will help you set up for success. I cannot wait to share all the details. And remember, you can always email me at sherry@sherrychaban.com for more info or to make sure you get on the Transformation in Paradise Metamorphosis Greece early bird waiting list. Now, secondly, for Black Friday this year, I'm offering access to my most popular Follow at Your Own Pace coaching program, all bundled up at a discount starting this Thursday, November 23. So you'll be able to access my most popular programs at 70% off. Make sure you watch out for those emails this week so that you don't miss the limited chance to grab my 28-day core bodyweight program, my 28-day glutes bodyweight program, the 2024 Mind Body Reset Challenge, and a 90-day access to the premium version of the HIIT Dex app, all right before the new year. All right, athletes, now without further ado, let's meet Jen. Hi, Jen, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to get into our conversation today. I think you're the first person that's come on to the show who's got a world record in some sort of thing. So super badass story from what we discussed last time. But before we begin and get into that, I'm just super curious as to Jen, if I were to ask you first and foremost, what would be your superpower based on the journey that you've been through recently? What would you say that that is?
Resilience, hands down.
I love this word. And so we always hear this word resilience, but what does it actually mean? Because we can be resilient and all of a sudden we're faced with this massive challenge, this massive level of uncertainty, and then we end up almost succumbing to the situation that we're currently in. So what would that mean to you? How would you define resilience?
Oh, I think it shows up a lot of different ways, right? When you're into mountaineering, like I am, it shows up on every mountain, at least 1,000 different ways on each mountain. But when you say I am resilient and something shows up that's trying to knock you off your path, you're like, oh, but wait, I'm resilient. So there's an option. There's a workaround, right? This isn't a stop. This isn't a quit. This isn't a turnaround. This is a, oh, now I have to get creative.
I love that. So there's no end game. This is just an opportunity to get creative and to pivot and to keep going.
100%.
Okay. So I can imagine how important that would be to summit all the mountains that you've summited. And so first of all, let's go ahead and define what you hold a world record in.
Yeah, definitely. So I am the first woman to climb the second highest peak on each of the 7 continents. It had been done by one male before, and the 7 seconds, unknown to many, are actually harder than the first 7.
Wow. Okay. And yeah. Why are they more challenging?
No, I don't know. Just the topography. So you have K2, which is the second highest point in the world. You have Everest, which is the highest point. I actually used Mount Everest to train for K2 because K2 is just that much steeper and has climbing features and all these different things. If you look at Africa, you have Kilimanjaro, which is the highest point. And you have Mount Kenya, which is the second highest point. And Mount Kenya is a rock climb. So you're in a harness, rock climbing shoes, all that kind of stuff. And Kilimanjaro is a hike. Right. So some of it is just like how the mountain's structured. Some of it's logistics to get to the mountain, all those different things.
Okay. Wow. Wow. I think anyone listening now is just super curious as to what called you to want to do this. I understand you're a mom of 7, first of all, so badass to you. I mean, that in itself is already a world record in many ways. So how did you go from, I guess, being a mom and having a completely different outlook on life to suddenly being inspired to become a world record holder in climbing and summiting 7 different mountains?
Yeah, you know, it's an evolution of things. And I'm telling you, timing, I swear, is everything on a lot of stuff in our lives. So in 2018, I was in a horrific car crash. Mm-hmm. It should have taken my life and didn't. A few weeks after that car crash, a girlfriend of mine went running on a trail. It was wet out. She slipped, she hit her head, and she never came home. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, I'm trying to piece these 2 events together. And the only thing I could come up with is I don't get to choose when I die, but I sure get to choose how I live. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at my life, I was choosing to put my life on hold for my children. I kept living by the story, like once they go to college, I'll get into this, or once this happens, or once that happens. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, like life is happening right now. I need to start doing me now because I don't have a promise of another decade or year or month or whatever. Like every day is a gift. So 2019 became this year of the bucket list. What do I want to do? What do I want to see? Like I started writing down everything in the world. Like I want to try pasta in Italy, right? Like all the things. And on that list was climb a mountain. And I was turning 40 in 2020. So I'm looking at, I'm like, what am I going to do for my 40th birthday? And I was looking at my list. So, you know, I'm going to climb a mountain because it's going to be a great way to launch my next decade. And it's something that's going to definitely be easier when I'm younger than when I'm older. So blah, 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 blah. I had asked some friends that were into mountaineering, if you could climb one mountain in the whole world, what would you pick? And the general consensus was this mountain named Ama de Blom. If you've seen a Paramount Pictures movie, you've seen that mountain because it's in the logo that the stars circle. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to climb Ama de Blom. Well, I'm training for Ama. COVID happens. So now I'm a homeschool teacher to 7 kids. And one of my kids is struggling with his math homework. I'm like, listen, buddy, we do hard things. You've got this. And he looks at me and he goes, if we do hard things, why are you climbing a mountain called I'm a Dumb Blonde instead of a real like Mount Everest? Ama de Blom, honey, not I'm a dumb blonde, but cute. And thank you. Finish your homework. We'll look at Everest. So he did, and we did, and he went to bed and I was still looking at it. And I was like, you know what? If he thinks this is the hardest mountain in the whole world, I'm going to climb it and show him that whatever Everest is, we can climb it. Hmm. So I call a coach. The coach is like, yes, I can get you ready. He sends me a book about becoming an uphill athlete, because I'd always been an athlete, but not necessarily a mountaineer. And in the front, this lady had gotten a Guinness World Record for doing something in the Alps. And I just remember calling my coach, like, my kids would think I'm cool if I got a Guinness World Record, because this homeschooling thing is not cool I don't even like it. They don't like me. We're not winning, blah, 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 blah. And my coach took that as a challenge. He's like, I'll think of something. I'm like, okay, great. But you know, Guinness World Record, because my kids learned how to read on those things. They have weird goals. I'm like, I'm not building a blanket fort or growing pumpkins or speed eating hot dogs, you know, like all the things that run through your head. And then a few weeks later, the coach called back and he came up with this. He's like, I think you should do the 7-second summits. And again, I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Sounds like a tongue twister. He's like, no. It's the second highest point, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, now listen, 7 continents, 7 mountains, 7 children. It sounds like a jackpot.
Right.
I'm like, I'm in. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. You know, like if it doesn't work out, at least I tried. So here we are.
Wow. That's so intense. And I have so many questions to ask you about getting that started. But I think for this particular story, especially going from selfless to selfish, because there's an element of selfishness that happens there for many moms listening right now who put themselves last, because that's what we do as moms, especially when we have a lot of kids and there's homeschooling and there's all these things that we want to do for them. How do we suddenly start to prioritize ourselves? How do we make that important?
Yeah. You know, I actually had a call to family action meeting, right? Like I sat down with my kids and I'm like, okay, guys, listen, mom needs to start doing more things that gets mom excited. So I called, I knew shifts were going to change because I was stepping into me, which was going to take time out of everything I was doing. And so I called a family meeting and I said, hey, listen, mom needs to start doing things that makes mom excited. So if that start affects, like if you start feeling like I'm not hanging out with you or spending time with you, or you need something, we just need to talk more about that because some things are changing. And it works because us moms, we're superhuman. Right? We figure out how to get things done. And so did my training look like every other person out there? It looked like nobody's, right? But it looked like something that would work with my family. So for example, when my son had a soccer game, I was the nerdy mom at the end of the soccer field doing step-ups with a basket, with like a bag full of water bottles. And I got my workout in while he was playing his game. Right. Now, does he wish I was the mom sitting on the sideline with like, you know, a coffee and watching and cheering? Sure, but I couldn't do that. So we had a compromise. So you just start learning to make compromises. And I have a couple older boys. So when I had to go to the gym and do training, we would go together.
Right.
And that was just the way that we added in time together. And sometimes I would have to train 3 different times during the day because I could only get little segments of it in. But as we know, a mountain's climbed 1 step at a time and it all accumulates and adds up and it worked.
So good. So good. I think now you defy that statement that things will be impossible because I'm a mom and I have kids. Not only do you have 7 kids who also have really crazy busy lives, but you're also being so present for each one of them and you're making it happen. You're multi-managing. You're doing the things that you need to get done as well as be there for them. And so thank you for that, because this is a reminder that I think we all need to hear. And I'm super curious, during that time, Jen, were there any feelings of guilt? Were there any feelings that you were missing out or maybe not serving your kids in the way that you wanted to?
Yes, tons of guilt. And then we like painted peanut butter of shame on top of the guilt, right? I mean, that's, I think, what we do. But here's a story that I want to share with you because it really helps have stories on speed dial of success. So we can short circuit this negative talk that doesn't serve anybody. I was going to climb Mount Everest. My biggest fear of climbing Mount Everest was being gone for the amount of time that it takes to climb Mount Everest. Yeah. It wasn't climbing the mountain, it wasn't being there. It was like, I was going to be gone, missing moments. And so guess what? A normal expedition to Everest is 8 weeks. That was not an option for me, like no way. So I found a company that was making tents that you could put on your bed that would simulate an Everest-like environment. Mm-hmm. So it would simulate the lack of oxygen. So all of a sudden now my 8-week expedition could be 3 weeks.
Wow.
Okay, like 3 weeks isn't ideal, but it's, you know, comparative to 8 weeks, I can do 3 weeks. So I called in grandma, I called in all the help, everybody was there. And then I went to the kids' school and I told the teachers, I'm like, hey, I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks. The longest I've ever been gone up to this point was 8 days. So I'm sure my kids are going to have a hard time and maybe fall apart or do whatever. Can you just give them a little bit of grace? And the school teacher came back and she goes, Jen, let's do more than that. Why don't we have the kids follow you while you climb Everest? Come in here, teach the kids about setting an Everest goal. And then, so I did, I went in there and I'm like, here's how you set big goals and here's what you do. And the kids colored little hikers and they wrote down what their goal was. And then in the front of the school, we made this huge mountain. And then I was a little hiker and I had a tracking device on me while I was climbing. So every day the kids could move me up and down the mountain, depending on where I was. So I had this tracker and the kids could follow me up and down the mountain. And then when I got to base camp, I realized I had Wi-Fi. So I called into the classrooms and I told them like what I ate and where I pooped and all the things that kids care about, right? And so my kids are feeling super seen and supported by everybody in the community. I'm the one who's like crying boo because I have nothing to occupy my time because there's no kids to feed all day long. And so I'm climbing this mountain. I summit Everest. The whole community town summits Everest with me. I come back. I'm the mom that climbed Everest. And like kids would come over after school and they're like, you're the mom that climbed Everest. I'm like, I am. Like, I want to climb Everest someday. I'm like, I will coach you. We will make it happen. And it was one of those things where I was my own limitation. Mm-hmm. Sure, would my kids have loved me to be home for 21 days? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But do you see like how much they got to be loved on by other people, how they got to be supported by others, how I still got to interact with them and FaceTime them like most of the expedition and all that kind of stuff? It was really a gift that I didn't see until I allowed myself to get out of the way.
Right, right. That's so interesting. And that's actually, I find where sometimes us being parents are very selfish, thinking that the kid needs just me, just my attention and my love, right? I have to do everything for this child, but not really realizing what else you're actually providing for them by giving this example, this beautiful role model. And now you've given them a massive story. They're never going to forget this moment in their life and what a badass mom is. And it's so funny, Jen, that you've done this all for your kids. That's I think, my favorite part of this all is, well, my kids challenge me. I've got 7 kids. I'm going to summit 7 different mountains. And that is going to be how my kids are going to look up to me and respect me. That is beautiful. So good. Yeah. So good. And so when you were summiting, I'm just curious because I've heard a lot about Mount Everest. I heard that a lot of people don't make it back. I heard that it's one of the most challenging mountains to summit. Was that true? Did you go all the way to the top? I guess it wasn't just base camp. You summited all the way to the top of the mountain. At any point, did you feel like there was a threat around your life or did you feel like any uncertainty around whether or not you would succeed and be able to come back?
I think any pursuit we take on, we always wonder, like, did I take on the right pursuit? Am I being crazy? Am I here? Am I right? Like, whether it's physically Everest or the metaphorical Everest that we have in our own lives. So I think doubt is part of it, right? And definitely Everest is scary. I have a fear of heights. Okay. So all of a sudden you have those ladders and ice fall. And I'm like, oh my goodness, why did I sign up for this? I can't even begin to think about it. It's not like it's an OSHA approved ladder set up on Everest, right? Like you stand on one side, the other side raises in the air. Like you're just like, are you so safe? But at some point we just have to have faith in what we're doing and trust the process. And because I had a near death experience before, I probably have a little bit different view on death. Like I think when it's our time, it's our time, whatever we're doing, whether I'm walking across the street or I'm climbing Everest, I don't know if I have a lot of say in that. Like I can make safe choices in whatever environment I am, but I think there's a bigger hand at play. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just having faith, moving forward and understanding that it's part of it. Now, Everest these days too, in all fairness. Okay. So Everest in all fairness is so much easier to climb than it was back in the 80s, for example. Mm-hmm. We have drone, the gear technology nowadays. Like things drying fast and the different layers that you're not like feel like the Michelin man moving up the mountain and just all the support teams and how many more people have climbed it. So then they're giving you beta on what to expect. And so everybody's better trained. And it's just like anything, when you have the evolution of something, it gets safer and easier for the people that come next.
Right, right. So how long did it take you to train for this?
Okay, this is crazy. I was on the top of Everest. I was calculating this the other day for a speech. I was on the top of Everest for 10 minutes. I trained 1,232 hours for that 10 minutes.
Wow.
I share that story because so many times we get caught up in the destination or the summit or those 10 minutes. And we forget that all those hours before are really what making that 10 minutes possible. And so those hours before, you better find ways to enjoy that. Or you're going to have a miserable life.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that's the cliche quote that we always hear, learn to enjoy the process or learn to enjoy the journey. And that's actually that place of self-discovery, right? You actually learn a lot more about yourself during the training than just the actual race or the actual summit itself, because those are the moments where the mind starts to play trick on us. We start to think about whether or not we want to continue. We start to see how hard it is. And there's a massive uncertainty. There's a massive unknown. So during that training, did anything come up for you around doubt whether or not you'd be able to finish your training? Or even when you came down Everest, just the thought that you still had six more summits to do, did anything come up in your mind around quitting? Or why are you doing this? And what's the point of all this?
Yeah, I do. I think that's why we wave our flag at the top of a mountain,
Right.
because it signals all the times that we could have said no and didn't, right? Like I would say almost every climb, there's been 99 reasons to turn around, and I've been able to come up with 100 to keep going. And for me, I always look at it as life's going to try to throw us off our track. It's our responsibility to be resilient and say, like, well, is it teaching me something or should I really go? And I mean, I've definitely let go of goals before, because once I've gotten on the path, I realized, oh, that's not really what I want to do with my life. But I wouldn't know that if I didn't step into it further. But as I got into this more and more, I mean, it's just so empowering to go to different countries and meet different people and learn about their culture and then climb the mountain. Really, the mountains almost became secondary in the pursuit.
Right. Yeah, I love that you say that. And there's a couple things about life that I think we have to accept in order for us to be able to be joyful and to be resilient. And definitely one of those things is uncertainty, is that no matter how hard we try, no matter what we want to create, there's always going to be that level of uncertainty. And then I think the other part of it too is just understanding that fear is a common emotion or feeling that we're always going to have whenever we are faced with uncertainty. And it's also almost impossible to avoid fear, but what we can do though is harness the bravery, right? Instead of waiting or trying methods to overcome fear, what we do instead is build up that level of bravery, that strength, that trust, and that faith that you spoke about earlier in order for us to feel more comfortable around the situation or just to even rely on maybe a greater power than just ourselves.
Definitely. Like even when I was climbing those ladders, right? There was 99 things I could have thought about that was not going to help me get across that ladder. But
Right.
the thing that helped me get across that ladder is if I had a safe step. So I literally said safe step, safe step, safe step out loud so that my mind could hear it, so that my body could do it. And then it also crowded out any other negative thought that tried to latch on, because I didn't have any room because I was so busy doing safe step, safe step, safe step. And so when you're doing something hard, instead of focusing on all the things that make you scared, what's the one thing that you can focus on and repeat that mantra to get through that section?
Wow, I could have used that a few years ago. I have to share with you a story. I went one time when I was in Bali, we went and climbed a couple of volcanoes. These are actually active volcanoes. And in Indonesia, the way that they have safety regulations is not exactly in the same way that we have safety regulations here in North America, by the way. And so we had a few options that day. And one of the options was to climb up all the way up to the volcano and then just come back down. Another option was to climb up, go around the rim of one, and then come down. And then the third option was to climb up one, go around the rim, go down, and then climb up the second one, rim, go around the rim, and then come back down. So, of course, we chose that one because we were CrossFitters and super into fitness. And that was the day, Jen, that I discovered that I have an insane fear of heights. Because once I got all the way up to that volcano, suddenly it hit me that on this side, I'm gonna fall all the way into the volcano. There's the crater right there. And then on the other side is more nothingness. And here I am walking on this meter wide little path all the way around the crater of the volcano until eventually I ended up on my bum. And just dragged myself all the way around to come back down. And so I'm just like, just even you sharing this, having to go on those little steps and those stairs. And I saw the ropes and the little bridges from, summit to summit. Like, I don't really know how you did that. So if there was words of advice that you could share with me or anyone else who's got an insane fear of heights, what would that be? Where do you focus?
Yeah,
What would you do to overcome that?
right. You have to focus on that safe step. You have where you focus gets big, right? We know this, right? We can dilate whatever. And so even when I ski, like sometimes I'll get into these spots where I'm in these tight chutes, and I'm like, I'm not prepared to ski the chute. And so everything around me feels big except the space I'm supposed to go. So I have to close out everything around me and like expand the space where I'm supposed to ski. right? Like, oh, that, like, I have to pretend that that's way wider than what it is. And then it allows me to relax and be like, okay, this is all I'm going to focus on. And if I turn on my blinders and only look at this next step, that's actually okay. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of keep building that momentum on each one of those. And when I would ski down the chute, yeah, if I focus on the tree, I'm hitting the tree. I have to focus on the white space next to the tree because that's where the snow is that I can go around it. And so it really is a lesson on where are you focusing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so what was your sport or what did you do training wise before you became a mountaineer?
Yeah. So when I was little, I was a gymnast, which obviously helps now because that body awareness. When I was in college years and a little bit younger than that, I was a soccer player. So that helps with that fast and slow twitch muscles to be able to go. Afterwards, for a little bit, I was into triathlon. So that really helped with endurance. And then I got into mountaineering. So it's just kind of this, you wouldn't have put all those, you know, it's not like I was a gymnast. I'm going to be a mountaineer someday. Right. It was one of those things like when I got into mountaineering, I'm like, man, I actually had pretty good sports that led me into this path. Thank goodness.
Right. Yeah. So good. So good. And I believe, you know, I believe that completely. Both my girls are in gymnastics. I think it's such a complete sport, especially for body awareness. I just wanted to have that base for them. And then later on in life, I know that whatever they choose, it's going to automatically translate into that. And I saw this all the time at my CrossFit gym. People with a gymnastics background would come in, would learn things like this. It would take them no time, the most insane mobility and body awareness and power and strength and all that. So it's definitely a lot of skills that later in life will continue to give. And so after that first summit, so you finished Everest, now you've still got six to go. Walk us through the journey. How long did that take? What was every single summit like? I know you enjoyed the cultures and traveling and meeting other people as well as just the absolute experience of it. But what was that like for you? Were there any moments where there was a lot of challenge that you felt like giving up? How did you continue to have resilience?
Yeah. So it took me 2.5 years to finish the whole pursuit because mountains have seasons that you climb them in. So you always climb Everest in May. You always climb K2 in July. You climb Antarctica in January or December because that's that summer and our winter. And so they had seasons. So you would go around and based on what season it was, depended on what mountain I climbed. And every mountain kind of had its struggle and then it also had its win. So for example, Dick Tao is the second highest point in Europe. And it was located in Russia. And I went there in September of 2021. And this was a technical climb that I curated all this perfect gear for, as in ordered 20 pairs of gloves, sent 19 pairs back. So I had like the perfect pair of gloves. I land in Moscow. My bags are nowhere to be found.
Oh no.
I'm like, oh no, that's cute. I'm like, okay, well, we'll just wait for my bags. And the guide was like, we're not waiting for your bags. We're going to a rental store. We'll rent what you need, but this is our window. We climb now or we don't climb it. And I had that choice to make. I'm like, what do I do? Do I go home and just come back another time? You climb this mountain in August and September, so I wouldn't be able to come back this year. I'm like, you know what? I'm here. Let's just figure it out. We'll rent some stuff. It's after COVID. Nobody has any inventory. Nothing fits me. I mean, it's a total mosh pit of whatever I'm wearing. I had to tie my backpack so it didn't fall off my shoulders. Like, it was terrible. We summited. Like, people normally don't summit this mountain because of where it's located. It has lots of weird weather. And I had to butt scoot my way down in sections because my toes hurt from hitting the front of the boots so bad. And I sat there. I'm like, you know what? We get so caught up on how this is supposed to look.
Yes.
Right? Like, I'm supposed to be in this perfect, pretty gear. And I'm supposed to be like everything, blah, 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 blah. No one cares if you butt scooted down the mountain. In fact, no one even asks, really, right? They just want to know, did you get to the finish and did you get back? And I think it just reminded me of, like, life is messy. You have to embrace the mess. And what comes out of that is your beautiful story. And whatever it looks like, and just own it.
Oh, so good. I love that. To me, that's resilience, really, is just not giving up and being so adaptable and so flexible and so hyper-focused on what that outcome is that's so important to you. And so that is a beautiful display of that. And I can just imagine after you've done the seven summits, I mean, this is what it was like for me after I finished my Ironman, was massive withdrawal. There's this thing that you're looking forward to for so long. You're so excited about it. It's your whole life. It's all you talk about. It's your obsession. It's all you think about. And you're waiting for this one day. And I'm going to tell you, that was the most exciting day of my life. I've given birth to two gorgeous, amazing, beautiful girls. And yet crossing that finish line was the most ecstatic moment of my life. And then 24 hours later, you're like, now what? Like, where did that go? That thrill is gone. And I got so depressed. And they talked about the post Ironman blues. I was so depressed that I right away signed up for another race because I wanted something else to look forward to. I wanted something else to work towards. So what was that like for you? I mean, this is even like way next level than any triathlon or any Ironman. And especially you got a world record. So what did you go through? What did you experience after that?
Thing. It is the same thing. All of a sudden you're like, wait, who am I? Like, I've spent so much energy and time in this pursuit. It's given me so much purpose and reason and why and all these things. And all of a sudden you're like, and it's done. Like, I was like, I mean, I was sad and no one quite understands it. Cause they're like, are you so excited you got the record? You're like, yeah, I am. But yeah. So I finished June 1st of 2023. Mm. And I decided that I wasn't going to pick up anything else until June 1st of 2024, because I feel like we're always doing this. What's next? What's next? What's next? And I wanted to teach my kids, like, sometimes you have to have a season of winter and just not be pursuing something and allow yourself to feel all these things that aren't as fun, right? That aren't blooming and in the news and all exciting, but it allows you to refuel your tank. And so that when the next opportunity comes up, you're ready to go at it again. So this is my season of just trying to figure it out and allowing it to be and practicing presence.
So good. So good. And we never do that. We never allow ourselves to do that, especially when we're so go, go, go. And we're so driven. And
it's so easy to go. Yeah. I mean, it's so much easier for me to be a human doing than a human being. All day long. So I'm in the practice of being a human being right now, and it's not easy.
Absolutely. And so in this moment of stillness, what new perspectives do you have around life that you didn't have before doing this whole journey?
Oh, you know, I really am just like in the middle, like in it, right? You're frustrated when things don't go your way, or when you have to like turn around on a mountain and come back another year or things like that. And then you realize, like, the pursuit's going to be finished someday. A friend of mine told me this. He sailed his boat from Florida to California. And he's like, Jen, he goes, you're going to be sad when it's done. So try to just embrace all of it, because all of it makes up the pretty story that's yours. And so I was very much taking timeouts throughout the thing, being like, oh, I'm never going to see this view again. I'm never going to be with these people again. I'm never going to be in these spots again. So how do I stay in this moment of gratitude as much as possible? And just really practicing gratitude, which for me, like, is taking time outs and saying, oh, I'm grateful for this moment.
I just have to sit in that a moment, because this is so powerful. This is so powerful. And it's so true. Imagine not only just mountaineering or just having that experience that you had and you had the privilege to have. What if we all did that in our day-to-day life? Just realize that this is the last and only moment possibly of me doing this one thing, as mundane as it may seem.
Right.
So good.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. When we can learn how to slow down and just appreciate the ordinary, it becomes extraordinary.
Oh, so good. So good. And speaking of extraordinary and this extraordinary woman I'm speaking to, how has this whole experience impacted your family's life? What is the dynamics now in your family's life after having done something like that? Because you're not mom anymore, right? You're super mom now, right? There's gonna be a lot more expectations of you around
the joy of the word.
Right.
Right. Like, so I come home from this quest. I just like secured the record. I'm flying home. I'm on a plane for hours. My son meets me at the airport. And he gives me the hug. He's like, congrats, mom. I'm like, thanks, sweetheart. And he goes, mom, your breath stinks. And you're like, see, I'm normally a human again. I was cool for 0.2 seconds and now I'm not. So yeah, so here's the thing of it. We're modeling life for our children. They're watching us. They're watching us for how we feel, how we respond, how we do things. And if you look at my life before the car wreck, I was very calculated and very like, this is, you know, how it should be and shoulds and all this kind of stuff. And then after that car wreck, I just had way more bandwidth for whatever was going well, whatever was going wrong. I failed at things that they saw. I didn't want to eat healthy. I didn't want to do things. And so we were living life more in parallel. Mm-hmm. And I think when you are in the trenches with your children and they're watching, normalizes the experience of life. It normalizes some of these things. And now it's not so intimidating because they don't know how to do it because they haven't seen somebody pick themselves up from failure, or somebody need to motivate themselves to go for a run because they don't feel like it today. Or somebody next time is like, you know what? I don't always like to eat my greens either. Pop-Tarts are amazing, but I'm not going to be able to climb Everest on Pop-Tarts. So we have to eat our greens, right? And so it just changed our dialogue. It changed our way of doing life. It changed all of it. And I like to say we're more well-rounded than what we would have been had I stayed on that other path.
So good. So good. What a beautiful reminder that things happen for us and not to us. And it's that pivotal moment where why did this happen really just ends up finding its answers in ways we least expect. So thank you for that. This was such an inspiring story today, Jen. I've loved every moment of our conversation. And if there was one last thing that you wanted to share with the audience that you didn't get a chance to just yet, what would that be?
Yeah, no, we hit on it a little bit, but let's hit it on one more layer deeper. I encourage everybody listening today is to set up a trigger meditation. So whatever that trigger is. So for me, for example, this week is every single time I touch a doorknob, I'm going to pause and I'm going to connect to the moment. I'm going to take 3 deep breaths. And it just gets me out of the momentum of thoughts wherever they're going. And I touch a lot of doorknobs, and it's just this little thing that brings me back to the present moment and reminds me, like, this is a story I'm writing. Is there another option? Or here's a different way of doing things. And so whatever you want your trigger to be, just try it and see what happens with your life and see if it helps you be more authentically you and connect to the joy in the journey.
I love this. I love this. Thank you so much for that beautiful reminder. And definitely it's going to be something that I'm going to start implementing right away. So I'll message you about that too. So if people wanted to learn more about you or to grab any resources that you have for them, where could they go to do that?
Yeah. So check out my website, jendrummond.com. I have a book coming out in January that you can pre-order now. I have some challenges that are fun. You can find my social channels, pick your channel of choice, reach out, connect. I love hearing what everybody's up to and supporting you on your quest.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jen. I love this conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.